Welcome to Ghost Biz here on the Business Report on Nova 103.5. My name's Gary Struble, and I have the privilege every week of talking to the finance ghost. He brings us up to date with what's going on the Southern African markets. Ghost, welcome back to the show. Let's perhaps just start out with Sasol, who for many investors was a really good example of how great timing can make you an incredible amount of money on the equities market. But if we take a look at the story that on your ghost mail this morning, Sasol's share price is down 40% year to date. And given that the company is an enormous company with many diversified revenue streams, what's happening to Sasol?
Hello, Gary. Hello, listeners over there in Namibia and everyone else. Welcome to the show. And yeah, Sasol, pretty sad story, right? Well, in reality, it's actually just not a very good business. Sorry to say it, but it's not. They are facing all kinds of challenges. It's very much a commodity and chemicals play. And the infrastructure is an issue. The emissions are an issue. They obviously had some really bad legacy deals, although a lot of that has worked out of the system now. It's just a very old school business. It's quite inefficient. Infrastructure is a challenge, as I said. So, you know, there's a lot of problems there, and people have very mistakenly seen Sasol as an oil proxy for a while, although I think that narrative has surely broken down once and for all. I actually haven't seen anyone saying that for some time now, because it's just not true. You know, actually, Sasol is just divorced from the oil price entirely. If you think you're getting oil exposure because you're buying Sasol, then unfortunately you are in for a bad time, because what you're really getting right now is chemicals exposure, and the international chemicals market has been struggling with just way too much supply, not enough demand. I don't know enough about the underlying chemicals market to know what fixes that, genuinely. It's just not a space that I'm like super interested in ultimately. But for sure, Sasol's been a huge disappointment. It's lost nearly three quarters of its value from that peak in 2022. And remember, this was a stock price that gave people extraordinary returns between the absolute depths of the pandemic in March 2020. Over the next couple of years. It was a really, really great story for a lot of people. They made a lot of money on Sasol, but only if they sold. And there's a lesson here, which is to understand what you're buying when you're buying it. Anything at the right price is interesting, but don't get behind the hype train where, you know, there were so many articles that came out, I remember a couple of years ago, about how Sasol can just keep going. And now it's suddenly this great company. And here are all the reasons why. The price does tend to drive the narrative. And you need to now also be careful of it on the way down. There's no sign of the share price momentum turning positive. In fact, at the moment, there's not even really any sign of it consolidating. It's just one-way traffic into the floor. But at some point, it will stop doing that and it will start to turn around. And, you know, at that point, the only articles you're going to see are about how broken Sasol is and how it's a terrible business, etc. That's probably the right time to actually start looking and to start thinking, hang on, can things improve again? You know, that price driving the narrative is one of the biggest things to understand in the market. And it doesn't mean you go contrarian for the sake of it, but if you're always following what the headlines are saying and what mainstream media is publishing out there and the really obvious stuff about a company, you're going to get it wrong actually quite often. So hopefully for Sasol, some improvement coming in the chemicals market, because that is what needs to happen for that share price to turn around.
Turn our attention now to a share that we've looked at a couple of times over the course of the year. It's been a very busy year for them, and that is WeBuyCars. They released a trading statement which shows core headline earnings growing between 21 and 26%. Headline earnings per share, though, fell between 60 and 65%. And then obviously down to them issuing a lot more shares because of all their corporate activity this year. Having said that, the share price is still over 70% up. What is your view on what's going on at WeBuyCars?
So I'm very bullish on WeBuyCars. I think it's something we've spoken about on the show before. I've certainly written about it a lot in Ghostmail. I just think it's a great business model for a number of reasons. You know, they don't look to make a lot of money on each car. They look for lots and lots of throughput, lots of churn on their stock, which is a good thing. You don't want to sit on cars for too long because they are depreciating assets. It's not like owning a nursery where your stock is growing in value every day. It's the exact opposite when you have a lot full of cars. The other nice thing about WeBuyCars is they are brand agnostic. They're not sitting there representing an international brand like Stellantis, for example, which is in huge trouble, where they are now sitting with stock that's really hard to move. They're under big pressure from the international OEM to, you know, get that stock out onto the road at big discounts. And WeBuyCars doesn't have any of those problems. So I really like the business. For me, it's my favorite play in the sort of motoring space. Having said that, I've been quite surprised by just how hard that share price has run this year. I kind of thought the IPO price wasn't too bad, actually. And if you look at sort of the offers that Transaction Capital got from the market, I didn't think they were bad. And yet here we are, the share price has gone bananas since then. But the earnings will be what drives that share price going forward. And it's quite interesting if you have a look at their earnings. So they go and report core earnings, which you picked up on there, which is literally the buying and selling of cars. It's the basic stuff. It's their core business, and that's still actually doing really well. But when they go and report headline earnings, then that includes all of the costs of all their corporate actions. It includes some other major once-off adjustments, and that actually then goes negative. And on a per share basis, it gets even worse, because there are just like loads and loads and loads of shares in issue. So, you know, it is a challenge at the moment if you have a look at headline earnings per share. And even if you look at headline earnings, yes, headline earnings does take out certain things to try and make the numbers more comparable, but it doesn't take out major costs related to something like a listing. It doesn't take out major adjustments on derivatives, which is an issue at WeBuyCars based on their historical shareholding structure. So, you know, the simpler summary of all this is WeBuyCars' core business is still doing extremely well. Whether or not it's doing well enough to justify a 70% pickup in the share price this year, I'm not convinced. I keep expecting the thing to at least slow down. Doesn't seem to be happening. I'm not going to fight the momentum. I'm a very happy shareholder. And I like the business long term. So this is the benefit of buying something for the long term rather than for a quick buck. I'm still in no hurry to sell it because I really do believe in what they're building over the next 10 years. And if the share price keeps going like this, I'll be very happy. Makes up for some of the pain in Transaction Capital that I suffered.
Now, a favorite part of the Most Excellent Ghostmail newsletter, which to our listeners, if you're interested in figuring out what's going on in the markets, you can get a daily update from the Finance Ghost. Go and get along to ghostmail.co.za and then subscribe to any one of the number of newsletters there. There's a section in the Ghost Bytes called Nibbles, and down in this is a story around Prosus. Prosus, obviously, a share an interesting share as it branched off from the big Naspers listing. But Prosus shareholders will receive their upcoming distribution as a capital repayment as the default option. It is still possible to elect a dividend payment instead of a capital repayment. And I just thought it would be a useful, perhaps to give us a bit of an idea on, so shareholders are still receiving money from the company, but not as a dividend, and instead as a capital repayment. Perhaps you can just quickly educate us as to the difference between those two.
I always love it when you pick out something from the Nibbles section. I know you love to troll through there and see what juicy little things you can find. And of course, that's why they are the Nibbles. So yeah, interesting question. I mean, it is like really technical, so we can't get into too much detail on it here. But the high level on it is that there are different ways for companies to structure the way they return cash to shareholders. Now, the two that everyone or a lot of people are familiar with would be a vanilla dividend, and then the other way is share buybacks. They actually go and buy their own shares up in the market from shareholders because they believe the share price is too low. So the company would rather just invest in itself, basically buy back some of its shares and take some shareholders off the register so that the remaining, you know, business value is shared among fewer people. Now, in this case, what we're dealing with is two different ways to pay a dividend. There are actually really three ways to pay a dividend if we're going to get into it. The one way is a traditional, declared as a dividend for tax purposes, cash in your bank account. Then there is the scrip dividend option, which is to basically receive shares instead of cash, which in some cases can have different tax effects, cross-border, etc. I certainly don't pretend to be an expert in any of that. That is like a whole nother field altogether. And then the third way to do a dividend is to actually do it as a capital repayment. So, you know, if the base cost on your shares is 100 Rand or $100 million, and someone says, well, here's a dividend of $5, you know, you can have it as a dividend or you can have it as a return of capital, then the tax consequences for that will be different. I think for the vast majority of shareholders, they honestly don't even look at this. They kind of just accept the default option. And over time, it is what it is, because by the time you've actually gone and dug through the tax or, you know, actually paid someone to tell you what the answer is, you've probably spent more on the advice than you would have saved on the tax. So I think it is aimed at larger holders. They generally tend to look at this in a lot more detail because their shareholding is large enough to justify the professional advice that comes through around this. I think that's, you know, a good place to leave it. I would say if you are a Prosus shareholder, make sure you went and read or make sure that you saw Fabrizio Bluisi, the new CEO. He did this 100-day CEO feedback letter very nice, very casual, two pages. He's there in a very dressed down kind of shirt, you know, far cry from the Bob van Dyke days. And go and read it, go and read what they're up to, because I think that they are doing a lot of good stuff and you'll find some interesting things there.
So guys, let's assume I don't have time to read the letter. What do you think we should be looking out for in that letter, and why is it important that a CEO is able to communicate this way?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's dive into detail on that. Actually, I'm glad we still have space to cover that in more detail and it doesn't just need to be a passing reference. Look, it is unusual. It probably shouldn't be. And I think it's unusual because when you start to behave like this and you give frequent feedback to the market, then it starts to become the expectation, right? And with the greatest of respect to corporate executives out there, and there are some really, really good ones, but there are also far too many who are just incredibly talented at holding on to their jobs, collecting their share options, and then retiring into the sunset, leaving behind whatever, you know, mess was left for shareholders along the way. So I have a lot of respect for the fact that Luisi even did this letter, but he is a really, really interesting guy. I mean, he's a proper entrepreneur. He built up one of the businesses that Prosus ended up acquiring. So he's worked his way up as an owner, operator, and entrepreneur, which is a completely different mindset, level of experience, type of person to someone who has built a career around allocating capital. Now, that's not to say that capital allocators can't be good CEOs. They can be. But I think where Prosus has come from has shown us that, you know, it can be dangerous. You can end up in a scenario where if incentives are not well aligned and if there isn't a clear strategy, it can lead to deals that just aren't necessarily very sensible. Whereas Luisi is very much about actually digging into the business and really getting stuck into the operations, making them profitable. And you can see that coming through in his 100-day letter. It's so nice to see the word profit used so many times. I know that sounds ridiculous, but where Prosus and NASPAS have come from, the word profit was not a big focus. It was very much about things like market share and growth, which is a different way of thinking. It's easy to grow if you're willing to throw unlimited marketing money at a business, right? You're going to grow. Whether or not you're going to grow profitably, now that's a different question. And Luisi comes from a world where you need to make a profit in order to survive. So I have, you know, in case it's not obvious, a lot of respect for him and what he's built. And I think he's a good choice for Prosus NASPAS, evidenced by this letter, evidenced by the frank feedback to the market. There's no nonsense in the letter. It's written in quite simple language, kind of just talks to what they're busy with and where they're focusing, and some really, really good milestones that they're starting to hit, some significant improvements in areas like the e-commerce business. So yeah, keep an eye on Prosus NASPAS. I mean, obviously the very recent share price performance was helped along by the Chinese stimulus, but even before that, it had a pretty decent year-to-date performance. I really do like Luisi, and I'm quite excited to see what he can do in coming years.
Right, guys, thank you very much. We'll leave it there for this week. Lots more to go and digest. That's on ghostmail.co.za. And of course, you can catch this podcast and all the bits and segments wherever you get your podcasts, on Spotify, on Apple, or on the Play Store, on any of the podcast apps there as well. Thank you for listening to GhostBiz this week. We'll be back next week with more.